Hi, everybody. Octopus Caveman here.
This is Peter.
Welcome to Popcorn to the Candy, the show where we talk about the films of the late, great John Candy.
This week, we watched Armed and Dangerous.
From what, 1986?
I didn't check.
Yeah, 1986. This film is a classic, and there's some classic stuff in it.
Some hilarious stuff. Altogether, not amazing.
Super forgettable.
Yeah.
Like, in a weird, weird way.
I didn't remember seeing this until I was watching it. And then it hit me like a wave. I'm like, oh, I've seen this. It's a great movie. But it's only when you're watching it that you think it's a great movie.
Same thing happened with me. I enjoyed the ride. And it was one of those like, oh yeah, I remember this movie. I've watched this movie 100 times. But instantly forgettable.
Yeah.
Like this is, I would only recommend this to a person if they were doing something else. Like put this on while you do something else. Like it's a good background movie.
It is a good background movie. And there's a lot of great moments in it.
Right. Like, just have it going on while you play a game on your phone or something, and you're good.
But watch it at least. It's a good movie. It's worth it.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I don't, something went wrong with this movie.
Yes.
I think it's mostly the director.
I don't know. I can't blame anybody.
This is interesting. Written by Brian Grazer, Harold Ramis, and James Keach. Brian Grazer, he's got 158 producing credits. He does all the, like, Ron Howard films.
Okay.
And then Harold Ramis, of course.
Amazing.
And James Keach, the cop from Vacation.
Okay.
Yeah. Weird writing, like, trio, right? Oh, and also P.J. Torokvei, T-O-R-O-K-V-E-I. He wrote Real Genius, Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield, and Caddyshack 2.
Well, he's got some good ones.
So the writing, that's a solid crew, right?
Yeah.
Here's where it goes wrong. Directed by Mark Lester, who directed nothing but garbage, and then three movies in a row. Like in 86, he did Firestarter, then he did Commando, then he did this, and then he did nothing but garbage. Firestarter's a good movie.
Yeah.
Commando's a good movie.
Don't know.
It's not the best Schwarzenegger movie, but it's good. It's got interesting stuff in it. This is bad.
This is okay.
He directed a movie about a dinosaur that comes out of the water called Poseidon Rex. Like, the level of garbage that Mark Lester has directed is insane. You know those, like, movies on Netflix where you go on there and it's like, Transformers 3 is out, so we have a movie called, like, The Robot Formers, and they, like, try and copy the movie poster and stuff? That's the stuff that Mark Lester directs. Garbage.
Lower than B.
Yeah, like, so much lower than B.
Worse than Trauma.
Yeah, like Trauma level.
Wow. You're pretty harsh on this guy.
He's a garbage director. He directs garbage movies.
You try to do it.
I mean, yeah, it's probably a hard job. And like, hats off to him. He's making a living directing movies. But this, I blame him 100% for this movie not being great. Because you have to look at it. Harold Ramis came from success, went on to success. Brian Grazer, same thing. You know, like the people who wrote this movie have amazing careers.
Yeah. And there's so much good stuff about this. I don't understand why it's not a great movie.
I think there's a great movie sitting on the cutting room floor.
Maybe.
Like, I think that it was directing and editing that just made it a garbage film.
But, like, you're going through it, and these scenes are great. And some of the story in it, it's great. I mean, it builds well. And then, okay, I just watched that.
Yeah, yeah. The cast is phenomenal.
Yeah, and they do an amazing job.
So, I mean, everybody in the cast is amazing. Even, like, bit parts are, like, great people. So you have John Candy, Eugene Levy, Robert Loggia is the bad guy. Yeah. He's, like, the head of the union. He's fantastic in everything. I love that no matter what it is, whether it's, like, this or, like, a serious movie or the Tim and Eric movie, he always brings it. Which is phenomenal. Some people, like, you can tell it's like, oh, this is going to be a piece of garbage, so I'm just going to, you know, kind of half-ass it or whatever. He brings it. Like, he delivers a tremendous performance in this movie.
Yeah.
Then we've got
Mike from Breaking Bad.
Mike from Breaking Bad. His name's Jonathan Banks.
Mr. Strickland from Back to the Future.
Yes, I only have him as the principal from Back to the Future. James Tolkien. He's also in Masters of the Universe.
Oh, I loved him in Masters of the Universe.
He's so good in that. Kenneth McMillan, who's Meg Ryan's dad in this.
Oh, he's great.
He's the dude from Dune, who's like supremely creepy in Dune.
Yes, he's great in Dune, and he's in Scrooged.
I thought so too, but I didn't see it on his IMDb. I thought that was him. I think it's a different dude.
Oh, wow. I feel bad then.
I immediately thought, like, oh, he's that the guy who freezes, right?
Yeah.
I thought so for sure, but I didn't see it on IMDb.
Okay.
We got to double check that.
Yeah.
Larry Hankin is phenomenal in this too.
Larry Hankin is which guy?
He's the kind of like crazy long-haired security guard. He's Doobie from Doobie's Taxiola and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. He's so great in this.
Yeah.
And then Tiny Lister.
Tiny Lister.
He's the black dude with kind of the the googly eyes.
He is awesome in this.
He's great at everything, but in this, you can full-on see his junk.
Okay, I didn't look.
There's a scene where he's lifting weights, and you can just... This has full frontal, if you look in the right places.
Like hanging out, or you just through the shorts?
You through the shorts.
Okay, so that's kind
of peek
frontal.
In there. See the shadow of the beast? So, great cast, great writers, garbage director, garbage movie.
Meg Ryan.
Yeah, well, I said that Kenneth McMillan was Meg Ryan's dad, so yeah, like, Meg Ryan's in this.
Yeah.
She's great in this. She is. She's adorable and phenomenal. This is like peak Ryan.
It is.
This is like before that weird, awful boxing movie she did.
I don't remember a boxing movie.
Oh, she did some piece of garbage.
Okay.
Some Mark Lester film.
Okay, so it opens with John Candy as a cop.
Well, Harold Ramis hated this movie. He wrote it, and he hated the final product, and he asked to have his name removed from the credits. That much. He was probably just like, Mark Lester directed a garbage movie. I didn't write a garbage movie. That's not my movie, right?
Okay.
It had to be that.
Okay, yeah. That kind of makes sense.
And there's tremendously, like, little banter between John Candy and Eugene Levy. And knowing those dudes and their, like, improv background, I know there had to be, like, tons of ad-lib stuff that just got left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. And we know there's a lot of story missing because the relationship between Meg Ryan and Eugene Levy is wrong.
Yeah, out of nowhere. Just poof. They're just, we're in love.
Yeah.
And then like, the direction of this movie is bizarre because is it a movie about rent-a-cops? Kind of. Is it a cop movie? Sort of, but not really. It's not really anything, because if you told me there's a movie where John Candy and Eugene Levy were cops, and it's just like a buddy cop film, I'd be like, that's going to be my favorite movie. But this is kind of that, but not really.
It's a buddy rent-a-cop movie.
But not really.
But it is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
You put it in any other context, and it's exactly like a buddy cop movie.
I don't know. This is so bizarre. This is like I got to like dissect this film, because if I think about individual scenes, I'm like, oh, that's great, that's great, that's great.
Right.
But as a whole, it's garbage.
Right.
How does that happen?
It's like they told the story without any nuance. Just, okay, this is next, this is next, this is next. Let's get rid of all these dumb jokes, and let's just get the story done.
Yeah, this is like a to-do list of scenes.
Yeah.
And here's a scene when this happens, and then this happens. It's like getting told, like, a great story by a dude with a super monotone voice.
Yeah.
It's like, and then the
cop... That's why I don't tell stories.
That's exactly what's wrong with this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it would be just as fun to listen to a dude in a monotone voice tell you the story. And then John Candy and Eugene Levy stop the bad guys. And then Eugene Levy and Meg Ryan are in love.
Okay, special episode after this, we narrate this movie.
Dude, I wonder if it would be any better than the movie or any worse.
It would be better if we did voices.
Oh, this movie kind of bored me from the jump.
I don't know. It was fun. It wasn't great. See, I just keep coming back to that.
Yeah. This is like a fast food movie. You know, like it's fast food lunch where it's just like, oh, what'd you eat today? I'm like, oh, what did I have? I don't know. I know I went to Arby's, right? By the way, guys, sponsor for this episode, Arby's. Come in and have a Jamocha shake and a beef and cheddar.
See, I was going to say it's like going to Sizzler instead of Morton's.
Yeah, this is a movie where if I left this movie and it was out in theaters and you were like, how was it? I'd be like, it was all right, you know? I had a hot dog in the theater. It was a good time.
Yeah. It's like you go to a Sizzler, you have a steak. You're going to be happy you had a steak, but... You could have gone to Morton's and had an amazing steak.
Right, right. So, like, the Morton steak is the steak that you're going to have a story about and tell people, like, oh, dude, yesterday I went to Morton's. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Sizzler, you're not...
After Sizzler, what did I have for dinner last night?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Let's get into the plot, I guess.
Okay, which I already tried to do. So we open with John Candy as a cop.
Yeah.
He's driving around, and he stops to help a girl with a cat in the tree.
John looks great in a cop uniform, doesn't he?
He does. He does. He tries to convince her that the cat will come down, but ends up climbing the tree and gets stuck.
They, to film that scene, straight up just put a kitten in a tree.
Yeah.
Is that, like, I need to check the end credits for, like, the no animals were harmed in the making of this film.
Back then they didn't do that.
I'm pretty sure they did, right?
I don't think so. I think it started in the 90s when people started caring.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely after Milo and Otis, because they just straight up murdered animals to make that film.
Yeah, but that was a foreign film, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was Korean. What's funny about that?
I don't know, but that's great. So they bring a fire truck to bring him down, and that's the open of the movie. And
yeah,
that point, we get the music.
He climbs up to get the cat and then gets vertigo, and the music is terrible in this. It's so dated and awful.
The theme song?
Yes. It's
Armed and Dangerous.
It's bad.
It is. It's great, though.
It reminded me of some of the, like, great, awful 80s movie soundtracks, though. Like, this is very, like, Ghostbusters 2.
Would you go this or Going Berserk?
Oh, Going Berserk is way better.
Really? Yeah. That weird bad rap?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Way better, because at least that tells a story and it's interesting. This is very Ghostbusters 2. Do you remember the end of Ghostbusters 2?
Oh, I remember Ghostbusters 2.
Well, I guess we're gonna... That Bobby Brown song?
Yeah.
Gotta take a joke.
That's, yeah.
This reminded me, it was like sort of like a Bobby Brown knockoff.
Maybe, yeah. I enjoyed it.
I want to listen to that Bobby Brown song now. I love that song.
Okay, so he's cruising the streets, and he sees flashlights in an electronics store.
Right.
So he comes up the back, and some dude throws a TV at him.
Like, a TV that you would leave on the side of the streets if you saw it new in the box now.
You have to pay to dump it nowadays.
Yeah, it's like a
recycle.
It's like a 20-inch, like, box TV.
Yeah, and it turns out it's his buddy, some other cops.
Yeah.
And they frame him, and we find out his name's Frank.
Yeah, so they frame him for taking the TV. So he pulls up on two cops robbing TVs from an electronics store. Right at that moment, other cops come. What was the deal with the other cops? What would happen with these two dudes if John Candy didn't show up and the other cops just showed up?
They probably would have been arrested.
It's just like bad luck, I guess.
Yeah.
But those two corrupt cops show up so much in this movie that you're like, oh, LA in 1986, there was two cops working and they were corrupt.
Yeah. And then we get the courthouse where he knocks over Eugene.
Yeah, so the corrupt cops are there in the courthouse, and the judge decides, the prosecuting attorney decides, since he's already lost his job as a cop and all that, then basically, like, time served, and that's enough of a punishment. And the judge goes, like, I don't like it, but I'll agree with you. It's like, well, you're the judge. I mean, like...
Well, it's the prosecutors trying to sweep it under the rug because I guess they're right in with everyone else, all the other bad guys.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the web of corruption in this is confusing.
Yeah.
And I don't know how far it extends. Like, is everybody corrupt and on the same side? Or are we dealing with separate webs of corruption, right? Like, are the cops and the judge and the prosecutor a separate web of corruption than the
this
union?
This isn't Lost. This is a simple storyline. We're going through one thread. We don't need to go into all of that stuff. So, I think he's leaving and he knocks over.
Yeah, on his way out, Eugene Levy is walking in and he bumps his shoulder and knocks him to the ground.
And then the client threatens him. Apparently, Eugene Levy's a
client is like a Charles Manson kind of deal, right? He's got the swastika on his forehead and crazy, but he looks like a trans man. Like, he looks like a woman that's transitioning to man.
Okay.
Like, I don't know why, but if you watch it, there's something off about him, and maybe it's the makeup. Like, the beard looks like it's just, like, spirit gum and, like, cat pubes and stuff, but it's absurd. It's absurd. It's like...
What do cat pubes look like?
They're orange. Look at this guy's face. That's cat pubes.
Okay.
He's got his, like, followers, like, Hitler saluting in the courthouse.
Yeah, and that's weird.
It's super weird.
But, so he's an attorney, and apparently he's pretty bad.
I don't think he's bad. If you watch this scene, he's kind of a phenomenal attorney.
He's just incredibly unlucky.
I think so. So the guy is, Charles Manson is telling him, like, if I go to jail, I'm going to kill you. And then Eugene Levy approaches the bench to talk to the judge.
Tries to convince the judge, yeah.
He's great about it. He's like, you know, how about we just, you know, I forget the charges against him, but there's like kidnapping. It's not serious as murder. It's like kidnapping, extortion, breaking and entering, right? And he's like, how about we plead guilty to the breaking and entering and just throw the kidnapping and all that away? Like, he seems like a great lawyer in this scene.
Kind of, but he's trying to tell the judge basically, hey, this guy gonna kill me if he goes to jail.
Yeah, so eventually he comes clean about that, and the judge is like, how about I give him enough jail time that he'll never see the light of day, or by the time he gets out, he won't even remember his own name, let alone yours.
Yeah.
And then you find a new line of work.
Yeah, the judge talks him out of being a public defender.
Yeah. And then next we just have the security scene, right, where they're joining the security guard. But they make $4.50 an hour as security guards. They mention it in this movie. If you go from an attorney to $4.50 an hour, you can't, like, even in 86, an attorney made more than $4.50 an hour.
Maybe not a good, sure. Not a bad public defender.
I know. There's no way a bad public defender didn't make more than $4.50 an hour.
You never know. $4.50 an hour wasn't bad back then.
Yes, it had to be.
It was at least minimum. Security guys make just over minimum usually.
I'll bet that was minimum wage in 86.
You're going to go look that up.
I'm going to Google it right now. Okay, Google.
Hey, Siri.
Okay.
Hold on. What was minimum wage in 1986?
Okay, give me a moment. The answer is about $3.35 US dollars per hour.
So 3.35 was the minimum wage established in 1981. And then in 1988, it went to $4.25.
How much did a public defender make in 1986?
Let me check on that.
If she knows this, I'm going to be amazed.
Here's what I found on the web for how much is a public defender make in 1986.
Guys, welcome the third host of Popcorn with Candy, Siri. Weird British Siri.
Okay, so they're making a little bit above minimum, maybe a dollar above minimum?
Yeah, it's about a dollar above minimum.
And that's pretty good for security, because security places nowadays, you don't get much more than that. A dollar above minimum is a huge deal for security. And those are armed security.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like a weird move.
It does.
Because he's an attorney.
If he's a bad public defender, public defenders don't make that much.
Yeah, but just being an attorney opens up a lot of job opportunities that I don't see him sitting in that room full of, like, weirdly ethnically diverse maniacs that he's in for just a, like, barely above minimum wage job.
I've seen enough of these attorney movies and attorney TV shows that public defenders don't make much.
They make $50 an hour now.
Now.
Today.
Yes.
$50 an hour is great.
That's a good four times more than what a security guy would make now.
Absolutely. I'm sure that sort of number was the same back then.
Maybe.
I'm sure it was like $15, $20 an hour.
Maybe. Look at Better Call Saul.
Yeah. This is the Breaking Bad episode just because of, like, Mike being in this.
Yeah. Okay, so we're at the guard dog security introduction.
How nuts is that room? It is like Police Academy cast nuts.
It is.
There is a person from every single ethnicity in there, and they're not representing their ethnicities very well. They look like the worst person from every group. Larry Hankin being like the worst representation of white people included.
Yeah. It's a great scene. Like,
that's some serious shade thrown at Larry Hankin. Just like the worst representation of the white race. Everybody just looks like a homeless maniac.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's great. You're right. It's a good Police Academy scene.
Yeah.
But we get the great intro of all these awesome actors.
Yeah, and Kenneth MacMillan is the kind of boss or whatever. This is a weird security group because it's run sort of like a police station in a way. Like, if you're a rent-a-cop, I don't think you show up at the office. You don't head on down to the precinct and get briefed in the morning.
No, but if you're new, you're going to have training.
Yeah, you'll have training, but they have like an office and they go there and they meet with their like sergeant. It's very cop, but it's not. It's like it's a security agency.
There are places where you don't go to regular posts. Sometimes you do have to go in and find out where you are for the day.
Are there armed security guards still?
Yeah, there are.
I don't know. I've never been in a place where I see armed security guards.
Yeah, it's harder and harder to find, but
like, unless they're in an armored truck.
Right, that's where they definitely are, but
yeah,
they probably work up to those positions.
Yeah, I don't know. For this episode, we should have hired Rent-A-Cops to do the episode for us.
That'd be funny.
That would have been amazing. Just like, you guys watch this movie and then talk about it. The training is like, okay, so Meg Ryan works there. The shooting practice is phenomenal.
It's good, but Eugene is coming into the room, and he meets a guy. He says, you look like a guy that defended me once. He says, did you get off? No, I got 3 years. It wasn't me.
Yeah, great. That's good. That's classic Eugene Levy.
The questions are great. Somebody asks if you can shoot people.
Yeah, and while they're doing the initial, like, getting to know the job, Mike from Breaking Bad shows up.
Yes, the union reps.
Yeah, and they have to pay $15 a week?
Something.
And it's like $30 that day, and then $15 a week.
And you instantly know these are the bad guys. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, the music, it's like bad music cues, like, you know?
Yeah, and my note here is Meg Ryan, so cute. I mean, yeah. She's adorable in this movie.
She is.
So yeah, the target practice is great.
The target practice is the best. So Meg Ryan teaches the target practice, and she's like, don't start firing until I'm gone. And Larry Hankin is my favorite, because he just starts, like, mowing down birds.
Yeah. John Candy's not wearing ear protection.
No.
I thought maybe that's trying to be cool because he's a cop.
I don't like Frank, like, in this movie.
Really?
I think Frank is, like, a bad, creepy dude.
They do a bad job with portraying him in this. I think
if it wasn't John Candy, you would hate that character.
Yeah, I think so.
You'd hate him.
They get together, do you want to be partners? And then they do I state my name oath, which is great because everybody says I state my name.
Right.
Everybody.
I barely remember that. I didn't even make note of it.
Frank is one of the only people that didn't say, or maybe Norman also. Frank and Norman didn't say state my name, but everybody else in the room says state my name. It's great.
Yeah.
And that's it. Just like a day of training, an oath, and they're done.
So they get assigned to watch like a pharmaceutical place?
Some warehouse.
Yeah. And it is so obvious that the two dudes robbing the place are Mike from Breaking Bad and his partner.
That's great.
It's like, so if I can notice it watching the movie, they should notice it having met the person in real life. But they don't. And then they have like a SWAT style like shootout, like a firefight with them.
Okay, so the big dude.
Oh, Tiny Lister?
Okay, so Tiny Lister is giving them their posts, basically telling them where to be and telling them when to take their lunch. They're walking by, and John Candy's making fun of, I guess Frank is making fun of Norman, saying, what'd you call him, a muscle-bound jerk? Trying to get Tiny all upset.
Which is like a supreme, like, butthole move.
It is. It's great.
Like, Frank is not a likable guy.
He's not.
This is the closest, like, I mean, other than, like, the 1941 racism stuff, this is the least likable character John has ever portrayed. And he somehow makes it okay just because it's him, you know? But he is a straight-up, like, sex offender. He is a pervert in this. Like, straight up.
Yeah.
And, like, confirmed multiple times in this movie, it'll come up, he is, like, he's an offender. He would be on the list.
Okay, so one of them is walking separately outside, and they see crime.
Yeah.
And they walk up and talk to them like they work there. You see guys in masks.
Yeah, it's Eugene Levy, and he's like you know, it's a little, it's not that cold, you know, like seeing a dude in a ski mask is a normal thing.
Yeah.
Like, where do you buy ski masks, by the way?
REI, Sports Chalet.
Are those a thing people wear?
When skiing?
I feel like they should just be called robbery masks at this point. Like, the proportion of people that wear them to do crimes,
right,
and people that wear them to go skiing, because I've been skiing, I enjoy skiing, I don't need a ski mask. It's not that cold.
It can be.
I mean, clothing for your face is not usually needed. You see those pictures of, like, the dudes that are in the North Pole, and they have a parka on, and it's kind of, like, warming their face. It goes up against the cheeks. They don't have a ski mask on or a crime mask. It's not needed.
No, but they'll end up with icicles, so it's sometimes needed.
Icicle boogers?
Yeah.
It's not needed. It's a straight-up crime mask, and selling crime masks should be a crime.
So he turns and runs away.
Yeah, they get into a straight-up firefight.
Who was it that said it? Was it Mike that says, you made me run, I hate running?
I don't remember.
But that was a good line. I liked it.
I was just, like, blown away, because it's, like, full-on action movie firefight with John Candy and Eugene Levy against Mike from Breaking Bad.
There's a great line. I think Eugene says it. You shoot me, you're going to have guilt.
Yeah, that is great. I forgot about that. Just much like everything else in this movie, I'd remember it if prompted, but not enough to tell you about it.
Right, right. That's why I have notes.
This is what we need to do, this as an episode. In 1 week's time, let's try and do this again. and see with zero notes how much we can remember about this movie.
Ugh. That'd be like a 5-minute episode.
Yeah, it'd be like, and then, God, I know that one guy was in it, right? And then something.
I'm up for it. Let's try it. Do it as a bonus episode.
Totally. I'm down for that.
Okay, so they're running around. They come across an angry dog. And then there's more dogs.
They go into a room that says, warning, killer dogs.
Nice.
That's a sign.
I like it.
And then for some reason, we have the lethal weapon scene.
Which one?
They're back at the precinct for their security job, getting screamed at by their boss for not
missing,
doing
it. You're missing the great dog fight. Frank stops the dogs. Like, he attacks them.
I don't remember this one bit.
He bites them, and they run away. Like, he jumps out at the dogs, takes one in the face, and bites it, and it runs away, and he gets the rest, too. It's weird.
I sort of remember this now. I don't know what is wrong with this movie that I can't remember anything.
You literally just finished it less than 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, and that scene doesn't exist in my memory. Doesn't exist. That I physically watched that while taking notes about an hour ago, if you do the math with the time, and it doesn't exist in my memory.
That's funny. Yeah, so they end up back at the office getting yelled at by the boss. Basically, they're reporting because their post got robbed. That makes sense why they have to
they
do that.
They got into a straight-up gunfight with criminals, and somehow they're in trouble for it.
Right.
That's nuts to
they
me.
Were set up.
But their boss isn't in on it. Kenneth McMillan isn't in on it.
He is.
What? Is he?
Yes. He's in on it.
Now, this is very hazy.
The only person that's not in on it so far is Meg Ryan.
At the end of the movie, he's not in on it?
He is.
He is?
Yes, he says it at the end of the movie.
Oh my God, this is like entering like it seems like a good idea at the time territory.
No, it's very simple. You just were annoyed enough that you didn't pay attention.
This web of lies is confusing.
Okay, they're going to go complain to the union.
Right. Well, so yeah, because Kenneth McMillan, he fines them $100, which yep. If you make $4.50 an hour is half your paycheck.
Yeah.
Half.
Yeah, that's pretty good for how much got robbed from the place.
I don't think that's a thing you can do. I don't
no,
think
probably
you can.
Not.
Fine your employees.
Not like that.
Like, I'm pretty sure employment law would have, like, a problem with you just, like, straight up, like, oh, half your paycheck because you, like, you what? They did a killer job. They were in a gunfight.
Yeah.
Armed security is supposed to be like, yeah, I chased off some teenagers that came here to skateboard and they, you know, they left. And I wrote a report about it. That was my day.
Armed security, but security.
Right. Like, getting into a gunfight with criminals should be like, are you okay? Like, do you need to see, like, our on-staff psychologist?
Where's the police report?
Exactly! They state in the training that your job is to observe and report. They use those terms. Your job is to observe and report, not engage in a firefight,
and
right?
And not get in trouble when you're robbed.
Right! So as long as they observed it and reported it, they should be in the clear. Oh, there's some armed guys. They shot at us, so we called the cops and we took off and reported it. Good job, John Candy and Eugene Levy. Not up yours, here's a $100 fine.
Yes, and Frank should know, he's a cop.
Yeah, this is a cop scene. This doesn't belong in an armed security movie. So they take it upon themselves to be detectives at this point?
Not yet. So they're leaving, and Eugene vents about the boss. He's a moronic poop head. Just a great line right there.
Right, and he says he's gonna... He's
talking to Meg Ryan, and she's like, he's my father. So you get a little bit of that, but it's like there's already a bond forming, but we don't see any of that yet.
This is practically their only interaction. Like, other than the, she teaches him how to shoot a gun, then they have this interaction, then later they're in love.
So they're at a union meeting, and he's trying to file a grievance with union, incites a riot in the crowd about all the questions, and just, he basically becomes a target for the bad guys.
Right. The union is like... they look so obvious like bad guys. Because, like, in a row, you've got Robert Loggia, the principal from Back to the Future, Mike from Breaking Bad, the dude with the mustache who's in everything, right? Like, everybody looks... I didn't even know his name. I feel bad. Yeah, and Tiny. Like, it's just like, here's the villains. You put those in any movie, and I would see those people and be like, oh, bad guy.
Bad guy, bad guy, bad guy, bad guy.
Every single one of them.
Yep.
So, yeah, they decide because they can't get their union grievance through that they're just going to take it upon themselves to do the detective work?
No. They decide after they get assigned to the dump.
Oh, dude, the dump. I forgot about the dump. The dump is great.
The weird guy at the dump is awesome.
Yes, the guy who's like, I've been here for weeks.
No, isn't it? What's his face?
There's Larry Hankin also, yeah. But there's the guy who's like super depressed about his life that's just been there forever.
Was that him?
No. And then Larry Hankin is the other guy. Larry Hankin is digging through the dump and having a good time.
Are you sure you're not thinking about the next day at the toxic waste dump?
Oh, that's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Dude, this movie, I hate this. I hate this. I could tell you, like, the plot to Class of 44 better than I could tell you the plot to this.
Okay, so they're at the toxic waste dump, but you see this green steam coming up from everything. They walk up to a trailer, and the guys come out, the guys they're replacing, and they look like they've been, like, melting in the toxic waste for years.
It's hilarious.
And they're like, oh, yeah, we've been here 3 weeks.
Yeah. Larry Hankin at the dump is fantastic, though, like... That is one of my favorite scenes in this movie.
Yeah. If you can find one of these.
Yeah, he's got a shoe, and he's like, let me know, you know. So he finds a red comb, and he's like, look at this. It's perfectly good. And John mentions he found a toothbrush, and he's like, where, what color was it? And he's like, oh, it was red.
There's three hills over that way.
Yeah, he's like, oh, that way? All right. Let me know if you find a shoe like this.
It's such a dangerous work environment with all those earth movers moving all the garbage back and forth.
It's where, like,
they're walking where they could just all of a sudden disappear in garbage.
It's straight up like Toy Story 3, the place where toys go to die.
Dumb. Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It was good.
I didn't know until much later in this movie when I started to notice like locations that I'd know that this was an LA movie. They don't tell you like where this is or what it is.
It took seeing things for me to realize too, but it's kind of quietly an LA movie.
Yeah, I think there's like what, the pier in Malibu?
One of those piers.
Yeah, like that. It's like Santa Monica, Malibu area. But I was like, oh, okay.
I recognized the pier. I had to look it up.
That was it. I was like, oh, this is L.A.
So now they're staking out Bruno. Tiny.
Oh, this is great. They go to the
fitness club.
Super 80s. There's aerobics in this again.
And this crazy scary chick at the front desk.
She's...
I would not want to upset her.
She's phenomenal.
She's an awesome actress. I love her.
I do too. She's been in other stuff.
Don't hurt me.
I really do. She's great.
She's good, but she's scary.
Yeah. She's pretty masculine.
Yeah, but they jump the turnstile and run in and she chases them.
You know what's phenomenal? Like, okay, like China just died. Rest in peace. I don't want to talk too much trash on her. But that girl is way more feminine than China.
Yeah.
When they're talking to Bruno, he's lifting weights and they like kind of choke him so that they can interrogate him.
Well, you're missing the aerobics class.
You can see his hog. That's the scene.
I'm not interested in that. But you missed the aerobics class. They go hide in the aerobics class and they're just staring at Bud. It's great.
The dudes in the aerobics class bothered me.
Probably. Most dudes in aerobics class are there for a wrong reason.
No, I don't know why they were there. Aerobics isn't a thing that dudes do other than Richard Simmons.
They do it for the crowd. They do it for the view.
I mean, I guess. Maybe in an aerobics class, is like, that might be a good place to meet people, right?
You have to be somewhat in shape so you can kind of fit in. So you don't look too obvious that you're there just to look at butt.
Drunk Andy style?
Yeah. Like, I will not be in an aerobics class because it'll be too obvious.
Oh, my God. Dude, let's get shirts that just say, I'm here for the beeve, and just show up at an aerobics class together. Just like, yeah, I'll be in the back.
Just put a picture of a chick bending over in spandex. After the aerobics class, they find Bruno weightlifting.
Dude, the order is... This is...
And seriously, Frank sets up Norman
to murder
Bruno.
Yeah, yeah.
Here, hold these weights that weigh more than you do while I hold his head under them.
Yeah.
Like...
They almost just killed a guy.
Yeah.
People straight up get murdered in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We have to, like, move super quick on this because it's, like, fading from my memory as we discuss it. Like, I feel like it's, like, that picture of Marty McFly, and it's, like, going away.
Yeah. I like the, whoa, you strong.
I love my note. Talk to Bruno, see his balls.
So Bruno talks.
And then the three super strong ladies attack him.
Yeah. There weren't enough good-looking girls anyway, was a great line.
Yeah. And then they drive off. We have that pier.
They drive off, but Bruno almost catches up.
He does.
You don't, like, that chick and Bruno are the people you don't want
to
scare.
Well, what was he going to do if he caught up to the car? Like, it's a clown murders move. Like, he was just, going to fling his body at the car?
But that would have done something.
Maybe. The car was very small. It was smaller than the clown murders car.
He could have taken on that car.
What was the car? It was like a hatchback of some sort. It looked like a little Geo Metro or something.
Geo wasn't around yet, I don't think. Huh. But it was something like that.
Like a Gremlin?
Maybe. I don't know.
Urkel car? Mr. Bean's car?
Yeah, sir. They're at the pier.
Yeah, and they're talking to a dude who's like, I guess a retired thief. He seemed like maybe he was an informant when John was a cop.
Yeah.
And
he grabs one of his poles and starts fishing.
Yeah.
And catches a shark.
This scene is pretty bad. So he's just like kind of...
This is one of the scenes they could have taken out. It was slapstick and not necessary.
It wasn't necessary. I mean, I guess there's enjoyable stuff about it because I like watching John do kind of physical humor. Like him getting his picture taken after he's killed the shark with a gun.
Yeah. After taking all that time, he just pulls out his gun and shoots the shark, which is
great. Yeah. That scene kind of made it like, oh, okay, this is a good scene to leave.
They could have cut out half of it because there's the getting through the crowd across the pier and upsetting everybody. I mean, I've seen that happen in real life, but John Candy makes it funnier, but it wasn't necessary.
He pulls that gun out. Does he have a concealed carry license? Was that a thing in 86?
Probably, but he was a cop, so I'm sure he has the ability to do that.
Even being, like, thrown from the force like that?
He was a cop, and he's an armed security guard. So yes, I'm sure he has concealed carry permit.
Huh. I don't know if I like the fact that an ex-cop, like, if you were thrown out of the force, can have a concealed gun. Right?
He wasn't, like, a felon. If he was a felon, he wouldn't be able to have a gun.
I guess, but, like, the Rodney King cops, I hope that they don't have concealed weapons.
Me too. Okay, so they go to Meg Ryan's house for some reason.
She straight up just had sex. They show up at her house. She looks like she just got done boning. She's wearing, like, a silk robe, and, like, her hair is all messy.
She just got out of the shower.
She looks like she just got finished boning. Like, straight up.
Okay. Remind me not to open the door for you in a silk robe.
No, if that happens, I'm going to be like, you just got laid.
Okay, so she goes into a room to get dressed.
Yeah, and Frank is a pervert. I don't even want to say John Candy is a pervert, but John Candy's character is keyhole peeping on her.
Yeah. And she opens the door on him.
Yeah, and just looks like, oh, you. Like,
and just tries to get away from him. That's it.
Yeah, like, that's a pervert move.
He accuses her of being involved in the conspiracy.
And then this is bizarre. So, yeah, they mention the conspiracy that union's corrupt. They bring up this, like, sort of vague web of lies again.
Yep.
The Dharma Initiative. So
She kicks them out.
Yeah, at this point, she's, like, talking to Norman, Eugene Levy, and she's like, you know, I'd expect this from Frank, but this disappoints me. I liked you, Norman. Like, and you're like, why?
Yeah, you've seen him a couple of times. He works for your dad.
Yeah, he's...
He's proven himself to be kind of an idiot.
Yeah, he's the hairy, failed attorney, loser dude who, like... Yeah, like, I don't get it. What made her like him?
I don't know.
Then we have...
A club.
Oh, dude, and Tito Puente.
Oye, ¿cómo va?
Dude, Tito Puente in this made my day.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I'll remember about this movie when we try this next week. I'll just be like... Blah, 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 Tito Puente, yada, 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 the end.
Frank scores some girls.
Yeah, they're drinking with, like, super slutty 80s hot ladies, right?
Yeah.
Who've been in a ton of stuff, by the way.
And who apparently have no tan lines.
Yeah, and they're drinking the saltiest margaritas ever. They are, it's so salty, it's nuts. The rims are just brimming with salt.
And the bad cops show up.
The only two cops in L.A. in this movie show up.
It must be a cop bar or something.
Yeah, and then John Candy beats him up. It's awesome.
Well, they try to steal their girls.
Yeah, but John Candy being a badass is great.
It was good. Kind of a little bit mixed up for the last scene.
And then, I don't know why, but then we cut to the Robert Loggia, like, fancy dinner party.
Carlino. That's his name. Carlino. Carlino. Finally, at this point in the movie, I was able to write down the name.
Whoa, in your notes it finally does that. I just have him as Robert Loggia, but he's having a fancy dinner party and talking to Meg Ryan.
He propositions her.
Yeah. He's still not the biggest pervert in this movie. It's by far Frank.
No, but he's a very close second. So but then Frank and Norman show up in blue ruffled tuxedos.
They're dressed like Lloyd Christmas from Dumb and Dumber.
Yes.
It's hilarious to me.
But they rock it.
Yeah.
They're doing a great job in that.
I love the one comment about their outfits. Like, one of the rich people at the party is just like, oh, are you with the entertainment? But Larry Hankin is working the front door for the security, and they mention they're doing undercover work to sneak in. Why did they go there? it's not really established super well why they went there. They're just drinking and partying. Boom, they're breaking into a party.
It looks like a drunk decision. Like, we need to go confront this guy.
Maybe, but we need to go confront this guy in the middle of the night doesn't usually lead to, like, let's get tuxedos and put up a front.
But it was funny. It worked. It's missing stuff, but it works.
It should have been like, if I could be in the writer's room, I would be like, okay, they need to have a discussion at this bar and be like, you know what we ought to do? We ought to do this, blah, blah, blah. Boom, now we see them doing this. That would have made more sense to me.
You're right. But we needed to have the whole bad guy cops try to steal the girls, John Candy hits them.
This is overly complicated. Like, this movie...
It's like they put the wrong scene. When they cut that scene in half at the bar, right, with Tito Puente in the background.
Yeah.
Okay, cut that scene in half. Okay, this was the bad part, this is the good part. Oh, let's use that one instead.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah. So they are way out of place at this party. And it's great, because the girl says she didn't realize it was this formal. She would have worn underwear.
I like that line. That was funny. And Eugene Levy does a great spit take.
Yeah. And then Frank reads lips.
The reading lips scene is so great.
It's great John Candy reading lips.
I know that that's one of the scenes where I'm like, there's a great movie on the cutting room floor, because that's hilarious. That's John Candy.
Yeah.
I swear to God, this would be a phenomenal movie if you just got Eugene Levy and John Candy into cop uniforms in a cop car and were like, you guys are cops, go. And just let them improvise a movie. It would have been 1,000 times more enjoyable than this.
This scene helps build my case against her dad knew stuff. And it also, as a father, really bothers me.
Right. Meg talking to her dad. She walks up to
her dad, says, your business partner was grabbing my ass. As a father, I would be pissed.
Yeah.
But he's like,
Right.
And then she tells her dad basically what's going on. And he kind of admits it.
He's like, oh, I can't believe you, and walks away. But
he doesn't say he can't believe you.
Doesn't he's like, how dare you, something like that. He gets indignant about it.
He gets a little indignant, but kind of says it's my business or something. But see, now I'm starting to fade.
Right.
Not in my note, but
we're losing it.
Wow.
Who's a worse dad? The guy in 1941 who's like basically like, you know, stuff happens. You know, these guys only want one thing. You got to be prepared to give it. Or Kenneth McMillan in this.
Ugh. 1941, she's a minor still.
Oh, good point.
I mean, he's a patriot and all that, so that kind of gives him some points, but she's a minor. Ugh. So Strickland arrives, and Frank and Norman are
Strickland. In the pool. I didn't remember that character's name, so he's just the principal from Back to the Future.
Yeah, the guy that calls everybody Slacker.
He is, like, one of my favorite actors. He's delightful in this.
And you don't know his name.
No, I've got his name. It's.
But you had to write it down and look it up.
I did. James Tolkien.
Yeah.
Yeah. J.R.R. Tolkien. It's a different last name spelling. He's just phenomenal. But you know what I've noticed is a lot of actors don't blink. I think that's like an acting thing where it's like, don't blink a lot. He blinks way too much. It's like a weird choice, but I would watch that guy do anything.
You'd watch him blink for an hour.
Yeah. I mean, as long as he's like yelling fun stuff.
Nice.
He seems like he's a bad actor, but he's just such a likable guy that it's okay. Like, I can see him acting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So they go out to the pool to look around, and they find Carlino coming out there. So they hide in his sauna.
Right. So Robert Loggia is talking to the principal from Back to the Future.
And as soon as they hide in the sauna, the first thing he says is, go turn the sauna on.
Always. That always happens in movies. If you go into a freezer or a sauna, if you're in movie land, you're getting stuck in there, and it's going to suck.
So they're turning the union pension fund into cash, and they're going to rob their own armored car. They're talking about the plot. So this is the whole the good guys hear the bad guys plot scene.
This is phenomenal because their conversation, it just sounds like bad guy stuff. I processed none of the information. It was just like, yeah, they're bad guys. They're talking bad guy stuff. Bad guy stuff's going to happen. It just was so...
In your head, you're just saying...
Yes. They might as well have just been like an evil version of the teacher in Charlie Brown. It's just like... It's just bad guy stuff. So the girls are looking for their dates. And they come up and they notice the guys in the sauna. They can kind of see them in the background. And they're great. They jump to it to take Robert Loggia away from there.
Right. After they basically haul off Strickland to go get killed.
But Robert Loggia says, like, one of the grossest perv things ever. He's, like, talking to him. He's like, ah, ladies, you know? Like, he's just, like, so lecherous and, like, grabbing him and stuff. And he's just, like, they're like, we're looking for a date. He's like, ah, I'm your date. And he says, how about a little one-on-one? Nah, I mean a little one-on-two. Ah, threesome. Ha-ha. That's his line. Like, that is verbatim what he says. That is, like, the weirdest old guy creepy thing to say. Threesome.
It was pretty rough. So they get out, and Norm attacks Frank.
Why does he attack him? Like, it's not,
he's
like...
He's mad. They were just stuck in a sauna and almost died.
But it's not his fault.
And he's been holding his head, so he's, like, even worse than just being stuck in a sauna.
But it's not his fault. What would he rather have happened? Just get caught by the bad guys and murdered right there?
Well, that's his fault that they're there.
It's just weird. And then they get into another firefight.
And they get framed for killing Strickland.
Yeah, he gets shot in the back by Mike from Breaking Bad.
Well, at least nobody's going to be called a slacker anymore.
And then there's just, like, the most forgettable car chase in the world.
Was this Doobie that says, hey, stop. They're not stopping.
I think so, yeah.
That was a good line.
Doobie.
And they get away.
That car chase is super lame.
And they die in a head-on collision.
Straight up.
They would have been through the other car's windshield.
Yes, again, it's a 70V. Like, I forgot what movie we brought up that, the car crash, like, 70V velocity changes. But it just reminded me of that. Like,
yeah, they're dead. But they get up and run away.
And then go to a sex shop.
Yep.
And Eugene Levy is reading Panty Boys.
They're just acting like they're browsing in the male porn section, which is yes. Great.
Well, that is like a straight up just gay sex shop for the most part, which is confusing because when they go to the Jack Shack later, there's a lady in the peep show booth.
Yeah, I had no idea that was just a gay place, but...
Well, I know because I paused so I could grab some magazine names and stuff for this. So I paused it and just kind of cruised the screen to see what was going on. Not a whole lot of straight stuff in there.
Are you sure it's not just the section?
It could be. It could be.
Yeah, because I don't think they would have just gay porn and women dancing.
So I've got some magazine titles. You want to hear them?
No, not really.
I got to read them.
As long as they're safe.
One of them might not be. So the magazine titles that I managed to grab from one scene, Nightstick, Odyssey, Colt. This one's my favorite. Man, Man. Not one man, two mans. Man, Man. Him. Reflections and Skin. I gotta know if those are real magazines. Like, I'm going to Google it later.
I doubt it.
Totally. I hope Man Man is a real magazine.
Okay, so while they're there, they're getting hit on. Or yes. At least Eugene is.
By, like, the most lecherous leather daddy with a, like, pencil-thin mustache.
Yeah, by perfect characters that fit their body types.
I love it. I love that, though. Like, I love that they fit their body types so perfectly.
Yeah. So they hide in the live theater. And
that's the Jack
Frank,
Shack.
Yeah, Frank like, asks for quarters.
Give me a quarter. He puts it in, and it's like one of the old school ones. Like now, yeah. You go into theirs, and there's just video. Like there's just a monitor. But those were the old school ones, where the door slides up, and there's a chick in there.
A chick in there just sitting there smoking. So she's like, "Oh, I got to get right up and start dancing."
And she dances for like 2 seconds, then it goes down. You need another quarter.
And they both scramble for quarters,
which is nuts. They're running for their lives, and they want to just watch this nude chick dance. That's another like. Confirmation, Frank is such a pervert in this.
He kisses the glass.
Yes, there. That is not safe. Do not ever kiss anything ever in any sex shop.
It was gross.
If you touch anything in one of those Jack Shacks, it's going to be a bad time.
And while he's doing that, Norm has an idea.
I don't know what the idea was. It was just like...
He goes and like kisses at the guy who was flirting with him and signals him to come in. But for some reason, that guy calls over the big lady in drag. The big dude in drag.
Yes.
Why did he call the other guy?
I don't know. His weird code is disgusting. Because when he talks to the transvestite, he like kind of he's like, hey, check it out. He flicks his tongue at him and then does the like fist in his hands. Like, yeah, the gay code is bizarre.
Yeah.
Because it's the tongue lick and then the fist in the hands. Is he asking, like, is he saying we're going to go fist these guys?
I don't know.
It's weird. It's like either we're going to beat them up, or we're going to fist them, or we're going to rape them.
I don't know. But he doesn't know about the second guy, does he? Does he know they went in there together?
I don't know.
Because it's just Eugene hanging out of the door and signaling him.
This leather daddy has some plans that I don't want to be a part of. Whatever it is, they are definitely not good. He's not like, let's go make sweet love in this Jack Shack with this man.
Yeah. It was weird. But then we get John Candy and drag.
It's great. But the thing is...
I like this character better than Frank.
I do. This is iconic. I love these two together. Eugene Levy as a leather daddy and John Candy in drag. But was there makeup in there? Because John Candy comes out in full makeup.
The dude probably had a purse.
Eugene Levy comes out with a pencil-thin mustache drawn on, which, by the way, not necessary.
He would be recognizable if without something, but
he's
recognizable anyway.
Yes,
the cops were dumb.
I look at him, and that's Eugene Levy. John Candy kind of pulls it off a little bit. Doesn't look like himself. He's got a wig going on, but yeah. Eugene Levy's just obviously him.
The dude in drag probably had a purse. Probably had what he needed.
I let's assume that. He's got glittery eyeshadow. It's amazing.
Yeah, somebody's good at their makeup for a guy.
Yeah, because either John or Eugene knew how to use that makeup, right?
Yeah, and did it well.
So this might just be his thing.
Maybe. So they get by the bad cops. For some reason, don't recognize their former colleague. Yeah,
it's just nuts.
But John Candy does great in this. And then they walk away and Chaps.
Yeah.
The Chaps were great.
Yeah.
I don't know why I say that about seeing Eugene's butt, but that was a good scene.
It is good. They go to meet Meg Ryan over in Echo Park.
And they spend all night in those outfits.
They do.
Decide, let's go home, let's go change, anything like that. Let's just go straight, take all night to get to find Meg Ryan in these outfits.
Yeah, Eugene Levy has put a map to cover up his butt cheeks. That's weird. But so I guess Meg Ryan is kind of in on their plan to like stop this armored truck.
Norm questions Frank's plan a little bit. He's worried about it. And then Frank has a monologue to kind of boost the spirits.
And then we have Robert Loggia's office, and he's talking about their plans for the money drops. It's like, here's a good guy's plan. Here's a bad guy's plan. This is what's going to go down.
Yep. And then Carlino threatens Meg's dad. And this is where he confirms he knows he's in on it.
Okay, so this is the scene where he changes sides.
This is where he's... No, not yet. This is where he's not sure about the plan. He's bothered by it. You could see him growing conscious.
Right, because they're saying we're going to waste both the guards, make it look like terrorism or something, right?
Yeah, and Carlino threatens Meg Ryan. So this is where he's really starting to really get worried. He has to go through with it or his daughter's going to get hurt.
And then we have John Candy dressed like John Belushi from 1941.
Yes, trying to get all tough, puts on the biker gear and...
Which is another, like...
His hand cannon.
That's like an iconic John Candy outfit.
It is.
You know?
It is. Meg Ryan pulls the other guys off the armored car, and then takes the armored car to the bank.
Right, so it's Eugene Levy and Meg Ryan are in the armored car.
The bank guards, before he finds out she's in the car with him, they scare him, saying it's the biggest haul they've ever seen.
Right.
So he's all nervous already, and then he freaks out that she's there. And she rides shotgun for him. Then John Candy can't start his ancient bike.
And, I mean, most of this is just summed up with, like, John Candy on a motorcycle. Because he can't start it, but then he starts it. Then, like, in the writer's room, I couldn't imagine how boring this would sound to, like, try and tell this to people.
The storyboard must
be awful. So John Candy, he's got a motorcycle, but he can't start it, but then he does start it. And then he starts driving it, but then he's not good at driving it, so he crashes it. So he's off the motorcycle, then he needs to find another way to get there, so then he finds a truck. Then he gets on the truck. Like, it's so boring. Like, it's like a little kid story. Like, and then my friend Sheila, she said, you can come, but then the dinosaur that she was playing with was purple, and then I wanted to play with it, but she said no. And then Frank came. Like, it is terrible. There's, like, something went wrong here.
Through all of that, we get her dad finds out that the guys he put on it that he was going to send to die didn't go. And he's like, so who's driving the truck? And they tell her it's his daughter. This is where he decides to change sides.
Oh, okay.
Because the driver's going to die.
Oh, you're right. You're right. This is. Okay, this is starting to make more sense.
There you go.
So John, when he dumps that motorcycle, he first goes to, like, a party car. There's just a bunch of dudes in the back of a truck getting hammered.
Yeah, a monster truck, basically.
Totally. Marty's truck from the end of Back to the Future.
But lifted.
Yeah.
And they just open a beer in his face. He starts walking off and slashes their tire.
They're just straight up, like, drinking on the freeway, like, over the...
It's not a freeway.
Oh, yeah, it's that bridge over the L.A. River, right? It's
one of the bridges over the L.A. River.
Yeah.
For some reason, everybody's trying to get across it.
And there is no traffic there, ever. Any of those bridges.
No.
Nope, never.
Nobody wants to be there.
No, there's nothing there anymore. That is an abandoned lot.
They filmed... Gideon isn't even there.
They filmed a reality show right there because it's so abandoned. They did a reality show on, like, how would you survive in an abandoned environment right there.
Nice.
Like, middle of L.A., there's just an abandoned portion of, like, empty warehouses and stuff. There's not even hobos there. You go there...
There's no reason to be there.
Nobo. So then he finds the meth trucker, the, like... super awesome trucker to like commandeer his vehicle, and he tells him the story like, we gotta get here, two people that I like are gonna die, and he's like, wee-haw, like, get in. He's just like so tweaked out and like super stoked.
The guy's awesome.
And murders a ton of people.
Yeah.
He just cranks his 18-wheeler into gear and starts running down cars.
Through cars.
And you can see that the cars are empty, but if they weren't, if it was a real traffic jam,
they wouldn't have been empty.
People would have died.
Yeah.
He would have straight up murdered people. And they're just like cheering while it's going on.
Yeah.
And then at one point, John Candy asks him like, oh, what are you hauling? He goes, rocket fuel.
It's great.
And at that point, you're like, okay, this is a Chekhov's gun. We're going to see this thing go off. Because you wouldn't say rocket fuel without...
No, you know it's going to blow up.
But why would he be driving like a horrible maniac like that if he was loaded with rocket fuel?
He was just inspired?
I guess. So they drive to the place where the people are.
Well, you get the car chase in the armored car.
A little bit. There's just nothing eventful about it.
They ran the bad guys into produce, a classic car chase scene.
It's always cabbage.
They're shooting at the armored car, and they're ducking. That bothered me so much, and then Meg Ryan says, wait, this is an armored car.
Yeah.
It bothered me so much.
I don't know, like, I'll flinch if something comes at my windshield, you know?
Right after they plow through traffic, he says, hang a left, but turns right.
Oh, weird. You watch this way closer than me.
There's a sight on his revolver.
Yeah, he's got that killer 50 caliber.
Why do you have a sight on a revolver?
I don't know. I mean, they make those.
You're not going to, like, hold it up to your eye. That'll blind you.
That's a good point.
You can't do that. I don't shoot a lot of guns.
I think more of, like, a scope on a revolver that I've seen, but I can't think.
That gun, the kick on it's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
And a sight? Like, no thanks.
Yeah, that is weird. I didn't really think about it, but that's kind of nuts.
The truck driver loves this gun. He says it's 50 cal, used for hunting buffalo. Up close.
Yeah, it's only legal in two states, and this isn't one of them. By the way, nothing is legal in California.
No.
Like, no gun is legal here.
This is where you get the rocket fuel line. Everybody kind of comes together at the same place at the same time, and there's an ice cream truck right next to where they're going to be meeting. For some reason, where they're going to be meeting.
It's so weird. And that dude is part of the Web of Lies. He's part of the Dharma Initiative. He has a rocket launcher.
The ice cream truck opens like a hatch of a tank or something.
Yeah.
And he comes up and he shoots the rocket launcher and all of a sudden the tanker gets in the way.
This is nuts because John Candy and the truck driver pull up in that truck, they get shot with a rocket launcher, the truck explodes, and then all the bad guys kill themselves.
Okay, the ice cream man. He's way too close. The truck explodes, he dies.
Right.
But as it's blowing up again, you see the ice cream man running away.
Do you?
Yeah, you see him in the top of the truck dying. And then you see him running away.
Huh.
So it takes out the ice cream truck, but it doesn't take out anything else.
But then the other car crashes into the explosion and they die.
Right. They just crash into the explosion.
It's so nuts. Like, and then Mike shows up in his car and they just crash.
I think, isn't that where John Candy shoots him?
John shoots at the car. And then the car crashes. Yeah, they lose control and crash.
But they don't die.
No.
Those are the guys that...
But the other guys, there's three guys that die when that truck explodes. Truck explodes, rocket launcher guy dies and then is reincarnated as himself and runs away. And then the other cars just drive into the explosion and die.
Yeah.
It's like a heavy metal death. Like those guys that just crash into the wall.
Yeah.
Like John's not responsible. Just like, this is a terrible accident. Rocket launcher dude is a suicide. These dudes, that's an accidental death.
But somehow they survived the rocket fuel blowing up attached to them.
Yeah, I don't get that.
With a fuel tank underneath them, too. Two fuel tanks.
Yeah. And those don't go. Those don't blow.
They should have.
Yeah.
Like, there's no doubt those should have gone in, like, a fraction of a second after the rocket fuel.
Again, writer's room, like, wait a minute, so this doesn't make sense. How did Frank survive this? Do we have him jump out of the truck? No, we'll just, you know, it explodes and he comes out and we'll have him have a little bit of ash on his face like he's dusty.
It's a huge tanker full of rocket fuel, but let's have it blow up like a single tank of propane.
Right, yeah, like, you guys, this is rocket fuel we're talking about, and this is a lot of it. Like, well, I don't know, I mean, what? Like, the Challenger? Nobody lived through that. When a rocket explodes, everybody near the rocket dies. Whew, what a bum-out reference.
Yeah.
That's basically the resolution.
That's the movie. They're talking to the trucker, he's like, sorry about your truck, it's all in a day's work.
The truck driver is kind of great in this. I kind of like him, but, like, it's such a bizarre character.
It is. So Norm knocks out a dude in the car. Frank gives the trucker the revolver. His old boss, the police captain, comes up and tells Frank he's a disgrace to any uniform and says, so you're going to have to be in plain clothes when you come back.
Right. So he
He causes a huge scene and basically murders some people and almost kills a lot more people and has a giant armored car full of cash. and that gives him his job back.
There's a tip for all you disgraced cops. You want to get back on the force, murder is the key.
There you go.
Because this would have been, like, that kind of car crash, this would have been, like, Lethal Weapon in the office, just like, I can't believe you knuckleheads causing all this crime. Like this is a problem. That's a lot of damage to other cars. This would have been endless paperwork. This would have been such a huge crisis and such a pain in the ass for the cops that they would have just been like, we're never having this guy back on the force after this.
Yeah. And this movie gives you a weird idea of what being a cop is because they offer Norman a job as a cop.
Right. Hey, Eugene Levy, you want to be a cop?
You're a really bad public defender. You're a really bad security guy.
Yeah.
You're really bad at choosing your friends.
I love that line, though, just like, we could use a good man like you, you know? But he says no. Like, no, I don't want to be a cop. And they're like, yeah, he'll take the job. He's like, raped into being a cop. Like, he's persuaded.
And they do the classic walking off into the carnage cop movie.
I felt like this was set up for, like, a much better sequel. This would have been way better. I want to see the movie that's just John and Eugene Levy, they're cops, go.
That'd be good. And I have my last note, great music.
No. No, not at all.
Absolutely. I'm opening the show with it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't care for the music in this.
Tough.
I don't know what I do you recommend this?
I do, but don't expect a lot from it. Don't expect to love it the next day.
I mean, I don't know. I like it, but
I like it, yeah, but it's not great.
This is the weirdest movie we've done. It's just weird like that. I don't know how to...
It's really hard because I like it. And I come across scenes that I like and things I like. And I think back on it. And yeah, I like that scene. I like that. But I wouldn't watch this just because I saw it was on.
I mean, I might if I was doing something else, like as a background movie, so I could watch the handful of scenes that I like.
I've been avoiding The Great Outdoors on HBO because it's on and available. And that's one of those movies I would just play. I don't want to watch it until it comes up now.
So this has a 14% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's pretty bad.
And a 5.5 on IMDb.
So nobody does it right after watching the movie.
No.
Everybody waits a day or two.
Yeah. There's a couple of 10 out of 10s on IMDb. Yeah, even the great reviews, though, aren't great. One of them is like, 10 out of 10 on IMDb. Well, ellipses. I liked it.
He gave it a 10 out of 10.
I don't know. Yeah. And then other people, you know, classic, instant classic, underrated, 1,000 laughs, dangerously entertaining.
That was sarcastic if you couldn't tell.
Yeah, I could tell.
Hopefully other people could too.
Oh my God, dude, there is a review on IMDb from Paul Rubens from the 23rd of February, 2001.
Can it really be the real Paul Rubens?
I don't know. I kind of hope so.
That'd be nice, but...
Here's the title of the review. Fun flick, good hair. Let's talk about Eugene Levy's hair in the mid-80s. Was it a perm? No. I think it was borderline mesh. What's worse is that I have recently discovered via mesh sweats that Levy had a molester mustache in the 70s. This is fascinating. Perm over the ears and a porn stash. Where did our sense of style ever go? If I have lived in the 80s and been in my prime, I would have lived as Gene Wilder's hair or Eugene Levy's hair. Either way, it's one fine species, with style, girth, and attitude. Of course, there's always Kurt Rambis hair, stash, and glasses if we talk basketball. Not bad there either. I wish Rambis was on the waiver wire. That is my favorite review of anything ever. That is tremendous.
It's odd.
So definitely not Paul Rubens, because this guy says, like, if I was in my prime in the 80s, and the real Paul Rubens was definitely in his prime in the 80s.
Yeah.
I don't know. Tough. I watch it if you're a Candy fan. Watch it if you got something else to do. You know, it's good, like, you know, you got to crochet or something.
Yeah.
Got some homework to do. Whatever.
Don't expect too much out of it.
Oh, boy. What do we have next?
We have Little Shop of Horrors.
Dude, I don't really remember John Candy in this.
He's got a small part, but the movie's great.
Isn't he a patient at the dentist's office?
No. That's
Bill Murray.
But he's the radio DJ.
Oh, okay. I got it. I remember this.
Yeah, Wink.
Yeah, he's good in this.
He is. It's a very short scene, but this is heavy Rick Moranis, and it's a great movie.
I haven't watched this movie in probably 15 years.
I love this movie.
It's going to be interesting to revisit it.
Yeah. We've got Spaceballs right after it.
Spaceballs is going to be tough, dude.
I don't think so. I think it'll be fun.
I don't like that movie.
So we've got Spaceballs after that. Then we've got Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
It's all good now. Yeah. There's a couple of weird ones thrown in there.
You're worried about Hot to Trot. I think it's going to be great.
Well, I liked it as a kid. I'm just worried that I'm not going to like it rewatching it, like Spaceballs.
I don't remember Harry Crumb. I've never heard of Masters of Menace.
I've never either. That one's going to be...
Rescuers Down Under.
That's going to suck.
I think we get my kids to do it.
Dude. Yeah, I'm into it. I would have loved to get Rent-A-Cops to do this one.
That would have been good.
All right, guys. So, hope that was all right. I hope this episode of the podcast is just like this movie, and everybody forgets this one. Like, yeah, and they did. Oh, man, I don't know.
What was that movie they did?
Yeah.
Was it any good? Yeah, don't listen to this episode a second time. You won't enjoy it.
Dude, I don't know. I'm interested to try to break down this plot next week.
Okay, we'll do a mini episode next week, or next time.
Oh, man, and we gotta go. I have to throw away my notes so they don't exist.
Here. Mine are gone. Oh, that's only half of them.
All right, and we gotta try to do scene by scene.
That'll be rough.
Yeah, it's gonna be the best.
Okay, so somewhere in there we're gonna have a bonus episode covering this movie again. Are we gonna have to do that for other movies?
I don't know. Just this one, because of its forgettable nature, makes me want to do that.
It is so forgettable. You're right. But I was so happy when I realized that I knew it. It was like, I'm watching it again, it just hit me, and it was like,
it's killer fun. Moments. There's killer moments.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for listening.
Yeah, and guys, you can check us out on Twitter at popcorn_with.
Find us on Facebook or visit our website, popcornwith.com. You can check out a bunch of other great podcasts. And if you feel like it, you can hit the support us link and throw us a bone or two.
Or a dollar. I mean, whatever.
Yeah. If you like us, I mean, that will keep us going. I know we haven't been going much right now.
Nothing says throw us a bone like Chaps, right?
I'm not taking a picture like that one. Who would you be? Frank or Norm?
Oh, man. I'd be down to be whoever.
You up for being in drag?
Yeah.
How about you up for being in assless chaps?
For sure. Like, okay. I've worn both of those things this week. All chaps are assless.
Whatever. You just don't have something underneath.
Right. Right. Yeah, I'd dress as either. This episode just has gone off the rails at the end. We just, like, totally...
There's a lot to cut.
Yep.
So, join us next week. Bye.
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 Sorry, folks. Park's closed. The moose out front should have told you.